please.
Justice Resnick has had a family emergency, so she will not be participating in oral arguments. She's read the briefs, and you tape oral arguments, so she'll listen to the oral arguments, and she will be participating in the decisions on these cases we hear this morning. The first case is 99-1838, Carl Campbell et al. Versus David Burton. Mr. Leffler.
Good morning, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes of my time. May it please the court, counsel.
Seem dark in here.
Go ahead. I'm listening.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
This matter, of course, was resolved in the trial court upon Civil Rule 56. An issue that ought to be of great interest. However, in this particular case, it's important to note this was a 14-year-old eighth grader who spoke to a seventh grade language art teacher who was running a peer mediation program. The child disclosed specific, according to her statement, the statement of another individual whose deposition is part of the record, disclosed specific sexual contact initiated by an adult, friend, or family. She reported fear of him, fear to talk to her parents about it, insofar as the family actually believes that that adult's child. She reported that he actually laid on top of her, grabbed her posterior, on top of her breast and crotch. And his classmate stated in her own deposition that his parents were trying to have sex with her. The circumstances are obviously very severe and very important. The student testified that she reported those facts, and it was told by another student to the teacher during a peer
meeting. Counsel, in your view, what is the legal issue that this case turns on?
What the legal issue this case turns on is the question of whether the public policy and statutory language set forth in the statute that mandates the reporting of known or suspected child abuse is sufficient to overcome the immunity set forth in 2744.
Yeah, let me stop you there because that's going to follow up on Justice Piper's question. As you know, the appellee cites us to the fact that the General Assembly seems to know how to say in statute that there will be liability for personal liability or governmental liability for acts that are prohibited. Here, there is no express provision in the statute. I didn't find a response to that argument in your reply brief. What is your response to that argument?
Specifically, the word liability, civil liability, does not appear. However, the decisions of this court, going back to before the statute, specifically in Brody, a long line of cases from the courts of appeal, well known to the legislature, as opposing counsel cites, the legislature is presumed to know the position of the courts on issues, and the line of cases is unmistakable until 1999 with respect to the construction of that statute to impose civil liability upon individuals who do not report the abuse.
Well, in Brody, as you know, we found that there was an obligation, a duty to a specific individual. That was child abuse, where the agency didn't report the child abuse. How is that? Is this case different?
Is this case different from the facts from Brody? Not in any operative fashion. I believe it's the same case in terms of there's a different level of whose responsibility is involved, but the same statute mandating the duty to report is involved. And of course, the court expressly reserved 2744 insofar as it's not applicable to 1983, I believe, facts involved in that case.
In the Court of Appeals opinion on certification, they indicate that you set out three questions that you wanted answered and thought the conflicts were involved and asked that it be certified. When the Court of Appeals finally certified it, they only certified one question. Is it necessary to answer your other two inquiries, or are we limited to what the Court of Appeals has certified to us? I specifically refer to the appendix, page 25, the appendix in your brief. Page 25, and it's got four or five zeros in front of it. And you'll notice at the bottom of page 25 is your first question. At the top of page 26 are the other two questions. Then go to page 33. In the middle of the page is the question certified. You very quickly see sovereign immunity is not specifically set out in the certified question other than by statutory reference.
I guess
my question is, do you think their one question encompasses all three of yours?
I believe it does. That has been my view of that certification. I was not troubled by the narrowing of the issue being raised on certification, particularly since the court allowed the case otherwise.
Well, it sounds to me like when I read the certified question that if we find that there are no immunity exceptions because 421 expressly does impose liability for failure to report child abuse, that the sovereign immunity issue is gone, liability is determined, and you go back just on damages. Isn't that about the way it boils down?
That's the way I see it.
Okay.
And of course, when we sought certification, we were trying to be broad enough to make sure we did not miss an issue that the court would find attractive for certification.
Sure.
But I've not been troubled with it beyond what we felt was appropriate for consideration. It's also noteworthy that the Court of Appeals, in a very helpful fashion, reviewed the cases that were in conflict. Agree that Reed from the 5th District, Rich from the 6th District, Sprouse from Lucas County, and Craigo from Marin County all represent conflicts with their position. Those are cases from 93 through 99. Contrary results also achieved in Height from the 8th District, and of course Kern from Summit County. Of all cases that have flowed, despite the immunity statute, from the Brody case.
Okay. Let me try it a different way, because when you bring those cases up, they present different fact patterns that are more clearly, maybe in some cases, proprietary functions. Your third question was whether a peer mediation program supervised by a teacher but conducted by students is a proprietary function. There isn't anything in the certified question with regard to that issue, is there? So it would assume that if we found the certified question and answered yes to the certified question, it assumes then that that's a proprietary function, doesn't it? Okay, then go to the second one. Whether the sovereign immunity defense, given the mandatory duty, and then you put in there subject to criminal sanction, do we not then sub saliento, in effect, decide that that statute, because there is a criminal sanction imposed for non-reporting, applies both to civil and criminal cases? Because that's the content of your second certified question.
Yes, and I think it's of the highest significance that there's a criminal sanction, a clear expression of liability by any common sense definition, although we have four decisions from different appellate districts that attempt to narrow that. Only two, actually.
Okay.
The Lynch case, which incidentally relies upon the version of the statute that included explicit language from the legislature that said shall alone, the push of the word shall alone shall not be enough. Perhaps an error. And then the second district case, of course, that we appeal.
I apologize to you because I'm not quite straight. I haven't reviewed these yet again this morning. After I read the briefs, I read them consecutively. In the next 2 days, today and tomorrow, we have, I think, three sovereign immunity cases. And I think it's this case, however, that the 8th District Court of Appeals, and was that name of that case Glover, something like that?
Yes.
Okay. It seems to me that they have lost enthusiasm for their prior decision. Would that be accurate?
And in the concurrent opinion, one of the judges there say this decision is correct here, but unfortunately the legislature has included that language about shall not be enough, which has nothing to do with this case. But that, the judge laments, I believe, in the concurrent opinion, that our decision here, our decision above, won't do any good in the future. Once that new language of the statute applies.
I thought they were indicating that they had improperly decided Glover.
I didn't read it that way, Your Honor.
Okay.
I read it in conjunction with the changes that the legislature brought to the statute, being aware of, well, and reacting to cases like perhaps this one, not on its specifics, but these types of cases where liability could be imposed simply by one argument because of the presence of the word shall setting forth a mandatory duty. That change came after these facts, after this case.
What would your argument be? That makes it stronger because the legislature is presumed to have known those cases and then incorporated it?
It's very, very often decided by opposing counsel at that point. I think that's a great importance to this case.
The criminal liability doesn't go to the public entity, does it? It goes to the individual. That's correct. Why is it not a reasonable argument that the legislature provides for criminal liability for the person who violates the duty of the statute, and combine that with the fact that there is no civil liability expressly stated as the General Assembly knows how to state civil liability? Why can't you argue just the opposite of your view, your response to Justice Leavitt's question, that General Assembly decided to hold responsible the person who really doesn't perform the act that there or violates the statute, rather than putting that responsibility over on a school board or teachers or superintendent?
Indeed, that argument is the criminal statute does not solve our problem here. The problem here is making sure that these kids at risk are taken care of by reports to the authorities that can react, as opposed to the information off.
But why is criminal liability the highest incentive for a teacher to do that? Certainly, that's a higher incentive than saying the school board, the school district is going to be responsible for a teacher making a judgment call if she did. I mean, this is a difficult case, is it not, on the facts? There's a student who had recanted her story on some other thing, and so the teacher now has to decide, well, is her statement about her friend's father really true? And sure, maybe the teacher was a little hasty in passing it off, but it's a difficult, puts a teacher in a very difficult situation, doesn't it? Is that maybe perhaps the reason the General Assembly did not give this broad liability?
Well, I don't think the General Assembly had any intention to protect these teachers who don't report that, because they point out, the
sure.
highest level of liability, which must be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. And in this case, the record reflects no criminal prosecution. You've got a child and a dog. No other witnesses. That's the problem. The criminal statute alone will protect these kids. But sure, the contrary argument can be made. And then that's what makes this a difficult case.
May I ask, counsel, I'm still unclear on, we talk about imposed liability, but the adverb expressly is used. The statute says expressly imposed liability, and I'm still unclear about where you get the expression, the expressly imposing liability. It seems to me that your argument is the liability is implicit in the duty.
It's twofold, Your Honor. Number one, the liability is imposed according to the court decisions, including this court's decision of Brody, the long line of appellate decisions, and under the legislature, which didn't react to that, but relied on its general point.
Well, Brody, I mean, let's even stop talking about Brody, since the statute wasn't in effect then.
Then
the court didn't.
The statute imposes liability.
Yeah. But it didn't construe the later statute, which had the public policy behind it, which said we don't want to impose these sort of things on the citizens' entities, which would be the school, for instance.
Well, the statute does not say civil liability.
That's right.
Clearly, the courts and the legislature intend to impose liability under that statute for non-report.
Liability, as the Chief Justice mentioned, liability, criminal liability, is on the individual, not on the sovereign entity, the political subdivision.
Well, I think it's a question of how narrowly the court will construe that language to give effect the general liability statute that protects government versus a specific statute imposed a mandatory duty and creates liability under a statute.
Well, so you use the verb creates liability, so that you're back to your implicit argument, aren't you?
Well, I think I have to make an argument, Your Honor, of course, but I think there's an explicit one as well. And it's explicit in the decisions of the court, and it's explicit when...
Well, it says that the statute has to be explicit. It can't be explicit in the cases. You say the cases find that there's that it's explicit. Okay.
And the criminal statute couldn't be any more than the state. Legislature had a chance to go back and fix this or change it when it added the language about shall not being enough. It didn't. It stayed with the general position. And we still have Brody and his progeny in terms of that construction of the statute, and we still have the criminal liability section. It did not say criminal liability is not. And the legislature has had multiple opportunities to rework this. The legislature is not taking the position that it wants to let anyone off the hook for not reporting child abuse. I don't think the court should be in the position. And I would, if only any time I have left.
Thank you, Mr. Leffert. Mr. Aaron.
I think the first question that needs addressed is what is the particular claim against each of these three individuals? We have Steve Clifton, who's the superintendent. There's simply no evidence that Steve Clifton knew of any suspected or known child abuse or neglect. So if he doesn't know of any suspected or known child abuse or neglect, he can't have a duty to report.
Does that involve the certified question?
Well, it does, because Steve Clifton is an individual who is arguably subject to the duty to report because he's a school official or administrator. But we don't have to reach the certified question for Steve Clifton because we don't have the duty under 2151.421. So if there's no duty under that statute, then that statute can't be an exception to the liability.
But is that not a factual question?
No, because there's absolutely no evidence that Steve Clifton knew any suspected or known child abuse.
Well, counsel, I'm maybe not impressed with the underlying merits of this case, period. But I thought we were here on a pretty important legal question of where there is an absolute affirmative duty to criminal penalty. Failing to meet that, does that trump the sovereign immunity statute? Isn't that the legal question that we have to answer?
As far as Deborah Mallory goes?
Yes.
Now, as far as the Board of Education, no.
Because the Board of Education may or may not come in with the provision in the sovereign immunity statute that essentially says that unless what the employee has done is rises to the level of gross activity, gross misconduct, the governmental unit entity stands in the place of the employee ultimately in terms of who pays. Isn't that really why they're here?
Well, no, they can sue separately.
Well, I understand that.
And
two separate cases, actually, I think.
Yes. But the political subdivision has to be sued separately, so the court has to look at what exception under the 02.744.02b exceptions applies. And there's only five of them, and they've asserted number five applies, which is the express imposition of liability. So then the next step is to look at the statute 2151.421 and say what language 2151.421 expressly imposes liability. And I believe that the argument that's being made in the jury is that the penalty provision, which is 2151.99, is the section that expressly imposes liability. But that would only apply to the employee.
All right. Well, let's deal with the employee. I think that's the tough question. Teacher.
Yes. We do not believe that 2151.99, which is a criminal penalty provision is an express imposition of liability, as that term is used in 2744. 2744 only applies to civil claims. If we look at the first paragraph of 2744.03, first sentence starts out, in a civil action brought against a political subdivision or an employee to recover damages. Then it goes on to state, the following may be asserted to establish non-liability. So at the outset, we're only talking about a civil action for damages. We're not talking about a criminal action. So the term liability is expressly imposed, but it's finally used in A6C, can only refer back to civil liability.
I was searching for an example in the revised code that would meet A6, express imposition of liability.
Examples stated in the brief. If we look at section 3.12, section 9.39, section 301.27, section 733.14. But even if there aren't a number of statutes currently in existence that would expressly impose liability upon an employee, that does not mean that the court needs to expand the scope of what expressly imposed means. It simply means that the General Assembly has set up a structure that if they want to, in the future, enact a statute that expressly imposes liability or amend an existing statute, they have that structure in place.
They use the criminal thing. The reason I was asking your learned colleague the question is because I don't see, I suppose maybe the criminal sanction is a persuasive thing, and that's why I thought maybe they were using it. But eliminate the criminal issue. If you pronounce her name Maloney?
Melanie.
If she knew and had a duty to report, does not that then, under respondent superior attached to the school board, forgetting whether Clifton can be put in jail or not. I mean, I don't see the criminal thing having that much significance to me, and I want to know why you think it does and that you're arguing it. It seems to me that obviously every superintendent or every school board is not going to know about everything that every teacher knows when the teacher is in fact instructed by the statute to report, assuming that. And she's instructed to report. Does the Clifton et al. Become liable because they're in charge of her?
In a roundabout way, yes. But liable to the sense that they can be specifically named as defendants in a lawsuit, I don't think so. Because in order to name them as defendants in a lawsuit, the client has to satisfy one of the 02B 1 through 5 exceptions. And respondeat superior in general terms doesn't satisfy one of the B1 through 5 exceptions.
Well, not if it doesn't apply, as Justice Pfeiffer points out, I think, that if, in fact, you say the certified question asks us if the statute imposes liability.
Yes.
And that's yes or no. If you say yes, then why do we have to even be concerned with whether or not the 2744 applies?
Well, I think because expressly imposes liability on whom? Even if this court finds it...
On the people that didn't report.
Yeah, and that would be just an expressive position on Deborah Mellon.
Well...
It would not be an expressive position on the Board of Education or Steve Clifton.
If a truck driver is driving his truck, his boss certainly doesn't know that he's driving 70 miles an hour and causes an accident rather than 50. The boss of the truck driver, the trucking company, is still responsible, aren't they?
Yeah, but that's under common law respondeat superior liability, which we do not believe applies here because of 2744B 1 through 5 exceptions.
So then that would make no political subdivision ever responsible for anything because it's always an individual that's doing it. It's the park attendant who is swinging a baseball bat when they shouldn't be. Obviously, didn't the school board or the city council or the mayor?
No, because there are to be 1 to 5 exceptions to B2. Any act of an employee involved in a proprietary assumption, then the political subdivision is going to be liable. Under B3, political subdivision is liable for failure to keep in good repair, you know, roads, etc. Then we have the B4 exception for physical defects on the grounds of premises.
So you're conceding that if you find that she is an employee of the school board, and if you further find that she had a duty to report, I was trying to think about the B3 exception that you just said.
Well, B3 wouldn't apply in this case.
Yeah, that's why I wondered how, why you went there.
In this case, yeah, I would agree that a failure to report is not going to give rise to direct liability against a political subdivision. But
how does a political subdivision have direct liability, except through its operatives?
Isn't your argument have a duty to perform a certain act, but in this case, there's no duty on the political subdivision to report. The duty only applies to the individual employee.
Isn't your argument that the General Assembly decided when the political subdivision is liable and when it is not? And there are instances in the statute when, I think that's your reference to 3, or B3, that there are instances in which the General Assembly says you are liable. And
yes.
And a decision in this case is not going to stand with the proposition that that sovereign immunities are no longer, or that sovereign entities are no longer liable for anything, civil actions of their employees. Is that's this case doesn't stand for that, certainly, does it?
No, this case really doesn't involve.
It's 5. It's paragraph 5. Is whether there's an express provision in the statute that says there's liability.
Yeah.
And that's their issue certified, certainly.
Yes, B5 and A6. And we're not up here asking for absolute immunity from all failure to report claims. Even the amicus brief of Ohio Education Association noted that they're not suggesting this court should find that failure to report is immune in every situation, because it's not. The 2744.03A6B exception to immunity, when the acts of the employees are with malicious purpose, in bad faith, or in a wanton or reckless manner, would still apply. And failure to report suspected or known child abuse or neglect in a number of situations is arguably going to be reckless conduct. But as this court has noted, factually, this is not a strong case. This
is why it's not. Now, who do you represent here?
Represent Steve Sutton, Superintendent, Deborah Mallon, and the Fairborn City School District Board of Education.
Okay, but if I understood that argument, you're just selling the teacher down the river in favor of the school district. I mean, it's in other fact patterns, because if you're in the malicious in that exception that you just cited, then the employee is liable and the governmental entity is not.
And that's correct. And because that is the way the General Assembly has said. The General Assembly has said on this hand, there's a duty to report suspected or known child.
Doesn't that cause a little problem in terms of representing you? I mean, you've got I understand your argument. If push comes to shove, we throw the employee overboard, and that keeps us immune and there.
Well, not in this case, because there's no evidence of or no allegation of recklessness.
I understand. Do you have to deal with Brody?
No. Brody was a 3.744 case, and Brody, before even remanded to the trial court for possible application of qualified immunity. So there's an argument that in Brody, this court recognized there could be an immunity from, in that case, it was fair to investigate, and in this case, it's fair to report. And now it's fair to investigate on the part of the political subdivision itself.
Do you feel that the facts in this case dictate the necessity of reporting?
No, we do not. And as Deborah Mallon testified in her deposition, she did not believe or suspect there was any child abuse or neglect occurring. She thought the story was being made up to change the subject. So even if this court answers the certified question that the statute does expressly impose liability, the case has to be remanded to the trial court for a determination of liability. There's no question that the statute creates a duty. The question would be, was that duty breached in this case?
Did anybody in this case suggest to Ms. Maloney that she get her own lawyer? Because I just heard... Because I just heard you say you represent her and you represent Clifton, you represent the school board.
Yes.
And you're saying my clients, Clifton, the school board, are not responsible because they had no responsibility to report. Ergo, that means if Melanie had a duty to report, she's responsible.
Yeah.
You're here representing her. Isn't that interest adverse?
No, we're not suggesting at all that Deborah Malley is responsible in this case. In this case, Deborah Malley has statutory immunity, even if there is a duty to report. Because if she doesn't know or suspect child abuse, which is an argument that was raised in the trial court,
I understand that.
She doesn't even have a duty.
But that's a factual question.
Yes, that is a factual question.
Okay.
But, and in addition to the factual question, we argue that Deborah Malley is entitled to immunity from any claim because the allegation was simply that she was negligent in failing to report.
But your argument is, in any event, Clifton and the school board are not responsible at all.
Correct.
Because the statute B-5 speaks about, even if we decided that the 421 expressly imposes liability, if the express imposition of liability has to be expressly imposed upon the political subdivision. The statute does, I mean, we have sort of bypassed that, but the statute does say expressly imposed on the political subdivision. So it doesn't, the respondeat superior argument from common law doesn't seem to apply here.
And I see that my time is up.
Thank you, Mr. Ahrens. So luckily you've used your time, which may take 30 seconds.
Thank you.
It's a criminal case.
Well, we can just have a
change. 2744.03 subsection B specifically says anything that relieves an employee's liability does not necessarily relieve the school board or the employer's liability. Subsection B of 2744.03. The facts are compelling here. The question of whether a child who tells a teacher that I was touched on the breast and the crotch by an adult friend and I'm afraid because I fear him makes this case extremely compelling. Any issue about whether this was a duty to report is a factual issue that a jury hopefully will have an opportunity to resolve in the future. But there's no question that this statute is painted extremely broadly to protect kids. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.